You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
What's up, everyone? It's Noah Daniels, and we're here for another episode of the Real Hauntings Podcast. On this episode, I have a special guest host. It's Jules, aka the Hex Baby. You remember her on from a couple weeks ago. Her and her partner have a really cool, crazy collective of haunted items in their home, and she told us about some investigations that she'd been doing with Becky, my bloody Galentine, and we're super excited to get her back on. Jules, thank you so much for co-hosting this episode with me.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me again. It's a pleasure.
Absolutely. And one of our most requested guests to get back on the podcast, Connor, is here. You all know Connor as the Haunted Historian on Instagram, one of the few verified accounts in our spooky space. So it's always fun to get to interact with Connor. And he brought along Josh as well. And Josh and Connor have started a podcast through the Haunted Historian. And if you haven't checked that out yet, make sure you do. It's fairly new and they've got great content. And I mean, look, everything they do is great. So if you haven't checked it out, what are you doing? Get out there, give them a 5-star review and rating. And yeah, guys, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having us back on. Well, thanks for having me back on.
Yes, and it's a pleasure to be on for a first time. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, Connor, last time you were on, you shared a story that was pretty riveting. It was fairly cinematic. I still think about you leaned up against that door in that abandoned building with all the paranormal chaos going on outside and you cocking and loading your gun for whatever may come through that door. Such a crazy story. I'm curious, now your other stories you're going to share, do they also involve guns? Did you go back to Texas? Did you have to shoot any ghosts?
You know what? That's the one and only investigation I've done to date in the state of Texas. So I'm really hoping that the openings of these investigations don't feature any more firearms. But, you know, I haven't done anything too extensive down there. Who knows what the rest of their crowd is like?
And before we get too far in, I would love to know how you and Josh know each other.
Yeah, you know, I connected with Josh. It's got to be pretty darn near, or at least maybe even a bit over a year ago. He comes from the production space, and he can talk all about that. But I reached out to him because I am very technologically challenged for anything that requires technology or production or editing or anything like that. Really, my talents end at the writing and the storytelling, and that's where his kind of just began. And so we kind of partnered through a shared interest in the paranormal, myself being in Arizona. He's out in Wisconsin, and we kind of just hit it off from a shared interest in our own ghost hunts since college, and his ability to help out in bringing the Haunted Historian podcast to life, as well as a number of other projects that will be debuting over the course of the coming year.
Awesome. And Josh, something we'd like to find out is where our guests fall on what we call the believometer, 0 meaning you don't believe in ghosts, and 10 ghosts are absolutely real. Where do you fall on that scale?
I mean, I have to be a 10. Like, I've been touched, I've been spoken to, I've seen things, you know, I have documented EVPs and videos and photos. So I just have to say I'm a 10 on that.
Nice. And Jules, have you had any weird, spooky stuff happen since we last spoke to you? I know it hasn't been very long, but I'd be remiss if I didn't ask.
I mean, yes, I had an experience where my partner, who is probably a 1 on the spectrum, I told him a story and he was like, "You're not going to believe this, but I saw the same thing. And I didn't want to tell you because I knew you'd freak out." Because I'm like a 6 or 7, I guess, you know, like there's enough for me to believe that there's something, but I've never been just, you know, like nothing has made me go, "Wow, there's something on the other side." So yeah, we both saw something in our museum while there was other people there the other night.
Was it like a full figured apparition or what did y'all see?
Well, we both saw something around the same height. It was dark, kind of, you know, how shadow people look. It was something similar to that. I would say it's about our hip height and it kind of just flashed across us in the same direction. We saw it at the same time. So I don't know what it could have been, but I'm one of those people where I'm like, all right, log that in the book. We'll try again at another date, you know?
Well, and you know, Connor and Josh obviously haven't been to y'all's, I mean, it's basically a haunted museum. Just for their—
you're welcome.
Yeah, just for their information, how many items do you think are in y'all's collection?
Over 300 at this point. There's stuff that we can't even display. You have to think it's our basement that's been converted into a museum and gallery space, essentially. And there's many things we can't even put up. There's a lot of things that we loan out to people who want to have installations in their tattoo shops and whatnot. My partner's a tattoo artist and he collides the two universes. So I'd say over 300 items. He's got over 150 Ouija boards. Most of them are handmade. So, you know, it's quite a number.
Yeah, that's it's no surprise that you and Becky have become friends with as much stuff as she collects as well. Well, Connor and Josh, I would love to know what story or stories y'all be sharing with us tonight.
Connor, I guess I'll let you take the wheel on this one.
Not to just drop it in your lap, but
I didn't want to monopolize the conversation from Josh there, so I was going to give him the chance to say it. You know, an investigation that we actually are going to be featuring for a somewhat upcoming episode of our podcast is one that I'm actually heading off to about 2 or 3 hours after this recording. It's out here in the Phoenix area. I don't know if you guys have ever been out or researched any of the haunts out here in Arizona, but as you can imagine, all patches of civilization out here in the Southwest are few and far between. It's not the small sprawling fields and towns and all that good stuff that I grew up with back out in Ohio. You leave Phoenix, you leave Tucson, you leave Flagstaff, anything like that, it is rock and sand for hours on end until you get to the next piece of area. And I say that because it really leaves so few places in existence for there to really be those historic structures that have the potential for a haunting. So those that do exist in Arizona are very popular, but very hard to get into because no one's just buying them out and using them for tours. They're usually have been reconverted and retrofitted into some new existence. The one that I'll be going to later this evening for the very first time for a full-scale investigation, and it's now 122 year history, is called Casey Moore's Oyster House. It was built as a home back in 1910. Like I said, just a private residence, husband and wife, they both passed away inside the home. And following that, and it still being, you know, the era of Arizona being the Wild West in many ways, it was transitioned into a bordello. And, you know, there's not too much documentation as to what took place inside of a business like that back in the desert in the early 20th century. But given the history behind many similar structures all throughout the region, you can unfortunately make a pretty gloomy assumption as to what the fate was for many people inside of there, and obviously what kind of illicit activity took place inside of there.
So, I mean, Connor, I obviously know what a bordello is, but for our audience that may not know, can you tell them?
The best way to put it, it's not the most tasteful way to put it, but, you know, it's a place that married men, that workers, that a lot of lesser characters came to and purchased a lady of the night for a night. And in many situations for those women, unfortunately, their night in many instances ended in their killing, in their murder, as was the situation in many, like I said, such institutions all throughout the state of Arizona and the Southwest. So as you can imagine, that is a large, sumptuous figure for what a lot of people are accounting for the haunting of the restaurant today. But a lot of the staff, you know, they're reporting everything from glasses and silverware flying off the table to the married couple that initially lived there in the early 1900s. They've been seen actually dancing in the upstairs floor of the home, to just darkened apparitions and misty looking figures roaming about the kitchen. It's really kind of just a hive and a hot spot. It's been listed on a number of outlets as being one of the most haunted restaurants slash bars in all of the United States. And again, since it's been somewhat relatively renovated into this now modern Irish pub, nobody's really ever had the chance to step foot and get in there. So up till now, it's really just been stories and some op-ed write-ups in local periodicals and roundups on national media here and there. But we're really excited because this is going to be the first time that actual equipment has been brought in to see what activity you can document, you could share, that you can, I guess the primary aim here is prove something's there, put a name, put a reasoning to the activity for the owners, and possibly turn this into a repeat investigation, not just for the Haunted Historian team, but for other teams to continue coming in. It's one of the most historic structures in Phoenix and nationally recognized for its supernatural occurrences. I think it certainly merits having its story told and finally allowing the spirits inside of there to voice their concerns or why they're staying there again after 122 years.
So
it's respectable.
Yeah, absolutely. So will you be spending the night in there, or will you just spending a certain amount of time and then leaving?
I will just be there until the early hours of the morning, right around 1 to 2 a.m. You know, I've been working to get inside of there now for a few years, ever since I moved out to Phoenix. And it's been really difficult. I really pushed for an overnight to stay all evening. And they are gracious enough, the owner that is, allowing me to stay shortly to kind of push the investigation into the after hours. But understandably, this not being something that they dabble in, they didn't want to just hand the keys and the green light over to an investigator who says, I'm just looking for ghosts. Let me into your building all night. And I promise nothing will be missing in the morning. So that's why I'm saying, oysters, hopefully, right? It builds a relationship. Yeah.
In an event like that, where you're going into a place that has not been exposed to very much paranormal research, will you try to have, you know, that owner and some of the staff onto your podcast while you talk about the results, or will you just take the results straight to the podcast, or what is usually your philosophy with something like that?
For this particular investigation, we're going to be recording audio and video with some staff members and the manager who's been there for almost this entire operation to both get a glimpse of their take on the location's history, popular encounters that guests have had, as well as the most startling occurrences that staff members, both current and past, have come in contact with over the years that they've all been there. And the intention is then to take what they've experienced, take what we can corroborate, and any new evidence that we can put together, as well as the voiceovers for those interviews, and incorporate that into the podcast. As that's largely the aim of the podcast, is to give a voice and tell the story of hauntings that no one has yet stepped foot in.
Yeah, well, I think that's, you know, what honestly makes, other than the content just being well done itself, I think that's one of the things that makes y'all's platform so popular, because it does introduce people, not just the casual person who likes listening or looking at spooky material. A lot of the people who enjoy your content are actually people that are looking to go out and investigate for their own, you know, material, entertainment, or curiosity, or what have you, which is such a cool thing about y'all's platform. So, Jules, as a somebody who considers himself a six, you know, I think you tip the scale into believing, but you're not whole hog in. I know that you have some thoughts about death the same way I do. And what does it actually mean if we go full into just, hey, ghosts are real, you know, there's some form of an afterlife, but why are some stuck and yada, yada, yada. So you've heard Connor kind of describe the investigation they're going to do in this place. What would it take to get you from a six to a 10 in that investigation? And what are maybe some, as you know, a somewhat skeptic, what are some pitfalls or signs that you would maybe worry about in an investigation like that?
I mean, that's an excellent question. A big thing I respect about like your platform, Connor, is that you go into it as an intellectual, which is where I'm coming from, where I'm weighing the options of, am I allowing myself to completely remove all connotations that I do or do not believe? Am I just going to allow myself to feel and experience? So I appreciate that you do that, because that's like my goal. That's what I want to do. So in an investigation, for me to tip the scale past where I am now, I would have to get something that's so intelligent, so, you know, it doesn't even have to be an apparition to me. It can be a question of, you know, are you enjoying this conversation? And they give like key, I don't know, answers that make sense to it, or anything like that, that just gives you the internal feeling of like, oh my God, I'm talking to somebody right now. This isn't just a radio giving something back. It would have to be something like that. And obviously, if I were to see something fly across the room like people have, you know, it's really going to be profound enough for me to evaluate how I feel. I'm one of those people where even if I do strongly believe in something, if somebody presented me evidence showing the other side and why that is a more tangible reason, I'm going to go with it. So if I was presented with proof that's concrete, you can't doubt it, you know, science can't explain it, it would definitely change my perspective completely.
And Connor, what are some of the equipment that you'll be leaning on in this investigation to see if there's paranormal activity?
Yeah, for a baseline investigation like this, just trying to lend a degree of accuracy and reality to a lot of what have to this point just been claims and allegations from people. It's not trying to be too fancy. It's bringing in things like EMF meters, EVPs, REM pods, thermal imaging cameras. And before, you know, it's kind of like, you know, make sure you can walk before you run. We're not going to go in there and try and catch the holy grail of paranormal before we know the reality of what you're dealing with. We want to just see, can we capture a voice? How much are they willing to interact with the living? Are they able to interact with the equipment that we bring in and are okay sitting down and answering questions? And you know, that's the real hope, is that, you know, the answer to that is yes. And that if we can yield good activity from that, then going down the road, we can start bringing in more intense pieces of equipment, such as the Obulus or Theremin and stuff like that. And, you know, they go later on into the hours and you bring, you know, numerous pieces of equipment and start, you know, like lining up three REM pods. And this time seeing if you can just track actual walking motion, lining up various EVPs and seeing if they can interact with just a single piece of technology and manipulate that technology rather than everything. So the science of it really starts to come after we break the ground tonight. But I guess that's the long way of saying, honestly, tonight it's the EMF, it is the REM pod, it is the digital voice recorder, just going back to basics and seeing what we can start to unravel of what has been just one of Arizona's biggest supernatural mysteries for the longest time.
And I want to jump into Josh's history with the supernatural, but I am curious, Connor, I have one more question, because I keep thinking about the last time you were on and just how wild that story was. What would it take for you to be like, F it, I'm out of here? Like this is the line and it has been crossed. I'm going to go home. I'm going to watch The Office. I'm going to have a drink and go to sleep and pretend like this didn't happen. Like what is that line? Is it like being possessed? I mean, what is the ultimate line for you?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think possession would do it, but I think a lot less could do it as well. You know, the thing about kind of breaking ground in these locations that we're trying to introduce to the paranormal community is that you go in with no preconceived notions. There's no teams, there's no individuals to tell you what to expect and what their experience was like. So when you sit down, you're kind of just going off of what has been hearsay and stories up to this point, and you feel totally comfortable about it 9 times out of 10. So that is to say, in the situations where shit hits the fan real fast, you're caught off guard tremendously. So let's say this evening when I go to this former home/bordello turned restaurant, if I go upstairs and I am just breaking out my gear, talking to the spirits with nothing on just yet, and the apparitions of the husband and wife appear dancing, my shit's going back in my bag real fast. So I'll walk downstairs, I'm gonna grab a beer on the house, and I'm gonna head out. Like, it's true. It's all
That's what I love. Yeah, that's an honest response, because I mean, and I do believe people have different barometers of what they want and what they're capable of. Brittany Crabb has become a friend of the podcast, and she is hopefully going to be co-hosting an episode with me next week. But like, she wants to be drugged down the hall by an apparition or demon. I'm just like, I could never come back from that. Like, just lock me in the bin because I'm done. Like, that's a wrap on Noah. Well, Jules, I'm curious, because you are kind of one of the queens of Scream. Like, what's that line for you? Would it be the same thing to seeing apparitions pop up, or would it have to be a little more than that?
Let me tell you, I'm such a person that I enjoy intellectual conversation. So, and I love horror movies. So you have to like suspend what you believe from horror movies. For me, what would seal the deal is if I had an intellectual conversation that lasted longer than a radio zip and throw. If I was able to have an intellectual conversation, if I was able to say, can you walk towards me and affect this thing, and multiple devices were being affected, and that kind of thing, that's when I'd be like, all right, I believe you're right. This is it. I wouldn't even need to see it, honestly.
But if, let's just say that does happen, you know, and you see an apparition walking towards you, could you sit in that moment, or would you have to leave the room?
I think I would, if I'm answering, like, if I really, like, I'm not trying to sound cool, but if I think I would just be so profoundly struck with awe, your fight or flight would kick in and I would freeze. Freeze. I wouldn't know what else to do. I would just take in the moment and then be like, did you see that? You know, like, that's what would happen.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah. I would probably wet my pants and
Yeah. Like, will I pee my pants? I don't know, but I think I would freeze, and I would just be like, whatever you have to do, do it now. You know,
take all my money and please leave.
Yeah. Please. It's okay. Yeah.
Well, Josh, so you did mention that you've had a history with the paranormal, and obviously you're pretty invested in this world at this point, which is somebody who myself wasn't a couple years ago, and now it's a daily activity, whether I'm getting people on the podcast or whatever, doing my own research. What were some of the moments that you knew, like, okay, this is something I want to dedicate a portion of my life to and being around? I mean, what really sold you on the paranormal?
Yeah, I mean, much like a lot of people that I've talked with that have a shared interest in this, it all stems from a childhood experience. And much like Connor, I know you've had childhood experiences, that it all started from a young age for me. And it was like, you weren't sure what you were looking at. Because you see these things in movies and TV, and it's like, okay, well, this is more real than that. So you can't exactly tell your parents that you saw a shadow figure standing outside your bedroom. And they'll say it's a bad dream, you're making things up. So you go to, in my case, the card catalog in your public library, and you search for the only book about ghosts that they have in the library, and you start to research it. And that's what's been something that I've carried through until now, is that I've always been dedicated to the research and figuring this out. Because there's,
I thought you were going to say you've carried that book from the library with you. That's amazing. What is it called?
But no, yeah, it was looking at that, and you know, hiding it from the teachers, because it's like, you know, the teachers see you reading a book about ghosts. They call your mom. She starts freaking out. It was just from a very young age seeing these things and realizing that, okay, this isn't normal. Let's figure out what's going on.
And you said you were touched by a ghost. I'm guessing y'all weren't making pottery. So what was the event that took place there?
So that was one of my first investigations. I put together a paranormal research team at the UW Oshkosh, where I went here in Wisconsin. And one of our first investigations was in a secondhand store near Madison, which used to be actually a brothel, believe it or not. Those were quite common back in the day. But now it was an antique store, which I'm sure, Connor, you know, antique stores can be very active because there's such a collection of items from a bunch of different people that may have passed and now are latched onto that item. Anywho, we were there and it was like 2 or 3 a.m., you know, the perfect witching hour. And there was about six of us, probably 5 to 6 feet apart around this huge table. And I say, stupidly, let's turn all our flashlights off and see what happens. And everyone's still, and it's maybe a minute, minute and a half, and all of a sudden I just feel this arm or this hand go down my shoulder, down my arm, and up to my thigh, and it squeezes. And I'm just like, nope, flashlight's back on. No effing way, I'm not getting groped by a ghost. But there was no possible chance that there would have been anybody that could have moved without making noise and been that close to me.
Plus, who would do that? And that,
I mean, it's also very ballsy to touch you.
And, you know, we're serious investigators. Sure, we were college kids. We were 21 years old, but we were serious about it. And I was like, there's no way somebody would have played a prank like that. And the fact that it felt like almost like it was a small child's hand really started to back up some of the stories we heard about the location, some of the EVPs we've been getting. It really started to prove that perhaps there really was a little girl trapped in this basement. Now, the story behind that was that she was murdered by an estranged father and a stepfather, and then buried in the basement and then poured over concrete. So she was literally trapped there, and there was no way they were going to be able to dig up her body. So most of the experiences we had that night started to line up with perhaps this little girl was trapped there after death.
In your mind's eye, can you still revisit that moment? Can you still feel that interaction? I mean, is that, or has it kind of moved on from you?
Well, you know, much like the experiences you have in college, parties, you know, people that you date, friends, classes, it's one of those experiences I can bring up with every single person in that group that was there that night. And we can tell these stories about things that we experienced on a new level that night. It was like stepping into a funhouse because we were at our first investigation and everything in the book was happening. Our names were being said. We were being touched. We were having intelligent spirits speak with us through different devices, full body apparitions. It was like, shit, is every investigation like this? And I mean, Connor knows, like, you can go to a place for 8 hours and experience absolutely nothing. And we were there for maybe 5-6 hours and had every single thing you could ever experience happen in one night.
This episode of the Real Hauntings, Real Ghost Stories podcast is brought to you by Wild Grain. Hey y'all, it's Noah Daniels, and oh boy, I just got my box of Wild Grain bread and pasta. My whole family has been so excited to dive in. We started with a sourdough and it was amazing. If you're looking to make Mother's Day brunch planning easier or just looking for a great gift for your mom, you've got to check out Wild Grain. Order before May 6th to get your box in time for Mother's Day. Wild Grain is the first ever bake from frozen subscription box for sourdough breads, fresh pastas, and artisanal pastries. Every item bakes frozen in 25 minutes or less, no thawing required. The next thing up for us to try is the biscuits with our breakfast. And you can now fully customize your Wild Grain box, so you can choose any combination of breads, pastas, and pastries. You can even build a box of only breads, only pastas, or only pastries if you'd like. Plus, for a limited time, you can get $30 off the first box, plus free croissants in every box. When you go to wildgrain.com/hauntings to start your subscription. You heard me, free croissants in every box and $30 off your first box when you go to wildgrain.com/hauntings. That's wildgrain.com/hauntings, or you can use promo code hauntings at checkout.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
It lit up like a Christmas tree, I like to
right,
say.
Right. That's what it, you know, a bunch of young college kids, it was like, holy shit, this is Christmas.
And since that time, I mean, is that still probably one of the most extreme haunts you've been on?
I would say that's top three. That is a location that I'm trying to get back into. The location has changed hands. The new owners are very open to investigations, so just kind of letting them break in. There was a place we were at in Missouri where we were kind of talking about the moment where you're like, nope, I'm out of here. We had something happen that night where we closed up shop and left because it was too intense for us.
What was that?
So that was, we were in this old military hospital and we were speaking through a ghost box, just kind of getting the basic questions out of the way. Like, and the series of questions that occurred was, are you a man? It clearly said no. He said, are you a woman? It said no. And then, okay, we're like, what are you? What could we possibly be talking to? And the radio kind of shut off. It almost sounded like it was trying to like really push something through. And then it said demon. And so I said, everyone, you know, their eyes lit up. And I said, everyone heard that, right? And they're like, yes, okay, we're leaving. Good night. But yeah, that was really intense. And that's a location that we actually got to. Our college group got there before all the big TV shows did. So that was kind of like our shining moment, which was pretty cool.
So do you believe, because this is something that's been a bit of a controversy, not a controversy, but I mean, I just heard a lot of different opinions from different guests. Do you believe in demons? I mean, or do you think there's bad spirits? What's kind of your thought process on that?
Much like I believe in fate, I don't think coincidences exist. I think that there are beings besides humans. You know, there are guardian angels, which aren't people. They're not spirits. It's the same thing goes the other way with demons. That's something that never walked the earth, that doesn't exist in human form. Yeah, I certainly believe there's a gradient between heaven and hell and evil and good. But yeah, through my experiences, I can certainly say that there are things that are beyond human evil that exist.
Yeah. And Jules, I pose that same question for you. Where do you fall on that?
You forget that I am an active practitioner for the last decade. And I'm raised in a family who are Celtic pagans. They believe in deities. They believe in things that aren't Christian. So am I open to accepting that these things might be real? And am I going to be respectful and always very cautious when I'm talking about and dealing with these things? Yes. But again, if someone came to me and said, these are not real, here's the proof as to why, and this is why it's X, Y, Z, I'm going to believe it. But to err on the side of caution, what he's saying, I would believe if somebody said that to me. I'd be like, you're right. Absolutely. Why would there not be things beyond our human comprehension? You know? So I definitely am inclined to believe that.
And so you believe that there can be something of, you know, I guess the way I would describe it, like pure evil in the supernatural form?
I believe that if you can conceive it and it is real to believe into other people, that it can be real in people's lives. I think that it can be manifest. You know, people believe in egregores. If you put enough energy and intent into something, it could manifest. I don't know how to explain that, but I believe people when they tell me these stories. So I would rather believe the person is being honest with me than try to disprove them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And Connor, have you encountered any demonic beings other than that thing that would brush your hair when you would go to sleep at night?
Oh, God knows what that was. Yeah, I'm always very hesitant to say, yeah, I'm on a very similar mental wavelength here as Jules and Josh. I believe in it. I think there's that strong separation between things that were ever living, flesh and blood, and those that have just been energy entities of the universe and the cosmos. You know, who's to say where they originated? I don't know if I've ever seen one. There's reason to suspect that I have in the past. There's been some suspicious activity, but I would need some damning evidence for me to
concretely
say it was this. I may have mentioned the last time around. I think that's a lot of the issue in properly identifying them these days. Just too many people in this field want to believe that they're dealing with the most dangerous entity possible whenever they step foot in the dark room. So if anything does something that makes them uncomfortable, which is, you know, 99 things out of 100 for paranormal activity, they're just going to say it's a demon. Like, it felt evil and stuff like that. And it's, you know, it's usually not. And even when they're doing bad things, you know, humans are terrible people in and of themselves. So, you know, it's more often than not, probably just a human. So I definitely believe in it. Whether or not we've crossed paths as of yet, who's to say?
Yeah, I find myself, the thing I have been noticing that I believe in more the older I get, which is not something that I'm necessarily proud of, is almost superstition or signs of things. You know, whether, like, I have a tattoo of a cardinal, and it's always just been like kind of a good fortune thing for me. And then, like, one day I saw a dead cardinal as I was out exercising. I went for a jog. And then, like, literally 15 minutes after that, I got like some really bad news or bad news from my doctor on the phone. And I was just like, what the fuck? And then, you know, and then that, it's probably happenstance, I don't know, but it does, you know, I'm just a human. And when things happen, and the more I notice correlation with other things, my wife, who was very skeptical, was like, you're silly, that's not a thing. But my brain has started to pick up on things like that more and more. And especially with like premonitions and things like that, to the point where I'll have bad thoughts come in and I just have to tell myself, like, that's not going to happen. That's not real, because I have this weird belief that if I accept it, like some of the premonition stuff that has come true, that if I'm just like, yep, that's it, this is, you know, the bad thing, then that bad thing will take place. So I don't know. I think part of that is probably just getting older, and doing like 120 plus episodes of this podcast is also probably informed my belief a little bit, but I don't know if y'all have experienced those same things. Well, Josh, you mentioned top three. So I want to know what your, and maybe you've already explained it, but I want to know what your number one is on that list.
Oh God.
Or did you just throw out a number because you know you've been on a bunch of,
no, it's really hard to say what is number one. I know this isn't a cryptid's podcast, but I've had an experience with a Bigfoot locally, which absolutely crazy about that.
Wait, you just dropped that on us. Yeah. What do you mean?
Just rewind. Okay,
we talk about cryptids or no?
I don't know about him.
Yeah, no, I mean, I consider aliens and all that stuff part of the paranormal. We have a very natural. Yeah, supernatural. We have a very loose definition for content here on the podcast.
The lines.
Okay. I'm not sure. I do have another one that happened recently that's really been intriguing, and it's put me down a rabbit hole of research.
Well, I want to hear about Bigfoot, because that's, you know, I'm from the South, so the biggest thing I know about Bigfoot is a big sign on the side of the road that's like, come into this museum and see an actual Bigfoot, you know, like, I don't know.
Yes.
I'm just going to look, this up, because it was a very interesting time period. So I'm from Southern Wisconsin, and this took place in 2006. And now there was a uptick in sightings. This isn't an area known for Bigfoot sightings, but there was numerous articles that came out about, this is during hunting season, about deer being stolen off the back of pickup trucks. And there's claw marks in the back of the pickup. So is it, you know, it starts the joke, you know, I'm looking at articles right now that is there a Bigfoot roaming around Holy Hill, which is a very large church out near me. So whatever, I don't care. I like ghosts, you know, I don't like Bigfoots. So it must have been early November and I was out hunting. I was walking along a trail and it kind of set the scene for you. The trail in front of me was completely empty and off to my left, there was a row of trees and probably 5 feet to the left of that, there was a small, I guess there was a small pathway that was carved out by the Ice Age trail. That's when the, you know, way back when that happened. So there was this nice little like path up in the woods. I'm walking along and all of a sudden I hear this grunt, you know, kind of like a deer would make if you're familiar with deer. But then I smelled this absolutely horrid smell. It was like somebody had never taken a bath in an 80-year life. It was the worst thing I've ever smelled. And I look and there is this mass of brown fur, 8 feet tall. And I'm not even over exaggerating. It was huge. And there was this like, I remember this so vividly. There was this green, neon green, like underwear almost. It was like it had taken like a safety vest and tied it around his waist or made some sort of primitive underwear. And this thing was running faster than a track star. It was just taking off through the woods. And I'm like, that was really weird. You know, not really thinking too much about it. But the number one thing that I noticed is that when this thing ran off, there was no white tail that popped up. Up here, we have white-tailed deer. When those things get spooked and they run off, their tail pops up and you can clearly see a white tail. Now, I don't think too much about it, whatever, I'm in high school. And about 2 days later, my dad tells me a very similar story. He says he smelled it, he heard it, and then he saw this just giant mass of fur running through the woods and there was no white tail that popped up.
Green underwear just, or?
Good gracious.
It was just kind of like one of those, this can't be a coincidence type of moment.
Sure.
And as I'm looking over some of these articles from the time period, they're mentioning a 7 foot tall creature that they saw just running through the woods. So it was not just my story. It wasn't just my dad's story. There is a collection of other stories that took place in the same exact area within 2 or 3 weeks of each other.
How bizarre. I mean, really. Like, that is really bizarre. Weird.
This is really going to date me, but I'm picturing Quail Man running through the woods.
Quail Man from Doug?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, I had to dig deep into that one when he had the belt on his head, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Connor, this is your podcasting partner. Do you also share beliefs in Bigfoot, or where do you fall on Bigfootery?
On Bigfootery.
Bigfootery.
Coined right here. But, you know, I wish I had a similar cryptid story to share. I grew up in Southwest Ohio. Out there, we know him as the Ohio Grassman. Supposedly, he just has a lot longer fur than his typical of a lot of Bigfoot encounters around the U.S. You know, I never heard stories about him. I never really had any personal encounters. I'm almost hesitant to say I believe in him. I think he's just one of those creatures who's been so just storied and fabled and just moneyed off of and turned into all these different ventures. It's almost like Mothman or the Loch Ness Monster for me. It's like, I believe aspects of it, like what the full extent of the truth is, I don't know. Like, I think the biggest thing for me right now is trying to just get my head around one of the newest somewhat debates of Bigfoot being an interdimensional being. That's
too much for me. That's where it jumps
that's
over.
The line.
That's where I draw the line. Now it's time traveling. Yeah. Deal with that.
I mean, neon green underwear, that's sure, a whole time travel, no.
It's like a Wookiee that's come to save us, but we can't speak its language. And you know, some redneck's just going to shoot it and then, you know, stuff it and put it in his lounge.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't wrap my head around so much of it. I am a huge cryptids fan. You know, I'm a very sensible, logical individual, but when it comes to cryptids, even more so than paranormal, you don't have to have any proof. If you just give me a story, my heart and soul is in it with you. Knowing it's fake.
This goes out to all of you. What do you know what the definition of a cryptid is, or where that comes from?
Its origins, I couldn't tell you. I would imagine if I had to spitball something, a creature of mythological origin, yes. I would say simply.
I think also the study of it is called cryptozoology. So there's people who study mythological creatures. Right. I think it's probably like folklore and mythological creatures mix into one category, if I had to assume.
So then aliens wouldn't fall into that category, right?
I think so. I don't think so, because they are plant like other planetary, whereas cryptozoology is our planet, what has evolved from our planet, if I had to assume.
Yeah, growing up in the South, we didn't really have, I guess, cryptid things that people would talk about, at least where I was, but aliens was, you know, always a big debate. Well, that's interesting. I didn't know we were going to get to Bigfoot tonight. So I feel like we've really done our job. We've covered the gamut of everything. Jules, did you have any additional questions for Connor and Josh? I know we're running up on our hour here.
No, I'm just, it's really nice to hear that there's other people who are taking this from an intellectual standpoint, as opposed to I'm going to hunt ghosts. You know, I think the purpose of us doing this is to kind of find answers, not just for ourselves, but for others, to bring peace to others in some way. So it's just nice knowing that there are, what are we, colleagues at this point, but you know what I mean? Like it's nice that other people in the field are doing something intellectually with compassion. So.
And Jules, I'm curious, is there anything in the haunted museum y'all have, like one item that you would like to tell Connor and Josh about that may pique their interest about the full display?
Sure. Let's see.
Not to put you on Shark Tank. I was just curious.
No, it's okay. The first item that comes to mind, okay, is a story, and it was given to us for free. It is a picture of a gentleman. Calvin will not tell me his name in case the name comes over, so I'm not like listening for it, obviously. But it is a tin type photo of a gentleman about this big, and he's under a glass container, okay? Because when he's off or away from the container, he causes havoc in people's homes. We've had two stories of people who are changed hands where this picture of this man has ruined these people's lives. And so we've never taken the glass off, obviously, to see what would happen. But we have a lot of items like that where people are like, I don't want you to pay me money. I just want to get rid of it. Just whatever. And we've got stuff like that now. And who knows what could really happen. But so that's one interesting one for sure.
Can we check out your museum? Is this on social media at all?
It is on social media. So unfortunately, my partner restarted his social media account because he wants to curate the page better to show everybody. But if you look at the Occult Collector, that's who he is. He posts a lot of stuff from his museum. The goal is to honestly get people in to just come and do private tours eventually, like, you know, show some items and then you can come to the experience. But yeah, he's the Occult Collector. I would check him out. If anything piques your interest, please, he's a well of information, would love to talk to you about it.
Has your guys' museum ever been investigated properly beyond just yourselves, or do you guys do that yourselves pretty extensively?
Well, you know, obviously we have Becky, who is a very experienced paranormal investigator. We've never had anyone else come in because COVID happened and everything, and we haven't had a chance to really offer it to anybody, but we've had experiences down there enough for me to be like, if something else happens, I'll believe, you know what I mean? So we're always open to people coming and just seeing and doing whatever in all hours of the night, because we would like to know, and he's a skeptic and he wants answers. So
I love that. That's such an interesting part of your life puzzle, that your partner has this intense museum of alleged haunting things, and he's a skeptic.
And I'm like, babe, one day the walls will bleed. Like, just give them time, you know.
Turn on the faucet, and it's just black goo coming.
Give it a chance.
Okay. That was a super professional plug and a great handoff by Josh. So kudos to everyone.
I'm looking at one of the pictures here, but it looks like you kind of put the museum together. And I mean, mean, it looks better than some museums I've been to.
Oh yeah, not to toot our own horn.
Very well done. I'm really impressed.
Me and my partner both have OCD. Okay, so that's
okay. So that's good. That's good for a museum.
Like that. Yeah.
That's your haunting.
Yes, I haunt the basement by cleaning it every day. So.
Well, Josh and Connor, before we get out of here, I would love for our audience to learn more about your podcast. I think it's really cool and something, look, if you are listening to this podcast, don't stop listening to it, but definitely go and check out Connor and Josh. They do some world-class haunted investigations. And not only is it entertaining, but you might learn something about a place that you didn't know about before. So yeah, can you guys tell us a little more about that?
Yeah, it's called the Haunted Historian Podcast. I know, very inspired, just named right after the page. Similar to the page, it works to document these stories and the histories and the hauntings behind lesser known locations in the US. Eventually, the plan is globally as well. Every story tracks an experience from our team having done one of the first investigations, if not the first investigation, inside of the venue. We have on guests pretty often. This past week, we had on Brandon Alves, and they share their experiences at locations that they've investigated for the very first time to kind of share firsthand eyewitness accounts with the audience, as well as a lot of their upcoming projects. So truly, the stories, the hauntings are things that you won't hear anywhere else because nobody else has ever experienced it. So that's really the aim of the show. You know, we're on all major podcast platforms, and the Haunted Historian Instagram and Facebook will link you there. So, you know, give it a listen. See if it's matches your vibe.
Josh, do you have a side podcast where you talk about Bigfoot and his underwear fetish, or is that
I might.
You should. I would be very fascinated.
Yeah, he has something else to think about and see if there's an interest in that and if I can build.
Oh, I'm sure there's some Bigfoot fan fiction lovers out there that want to know all about how I got that underwear.
Yeah, I'll be selling stinky pairs of underwear to people with a Bigfoot fetish.
So with that, I'm Noah Daniels.
I'm Jules Nolan.
I'm Connor Gossel.
And I'm Josh Hughes.
Ooh.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.